This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Haida Gwaii is an archipelago of over 100 islands off the northern coast of BC. It's renowned for its natural beauty, wildlife, and incredible biodiversity. It's also home to the Haida Nation, a unique place that is culturally diverse but dominated by Indigenous society. Film director Charles Wilkinson found that out of this mixed community comes a society living a sustainable life that is independent of corporate rule and extreme resource extraction. This is the focus of his latest film, Haida Gwaii, On the Edge of the World, which is screening this week in Vancouver. And Charles joins me in the studio. Hello, Charles.
Morning, Tim.
Now, Haida Gwaii, The Edge of the World, is the last installment of a trilogy. Can you tell me a little bit about the other two films and how this third one ties together with the two?
Well, interestingly, somebody at the Van City screening that we had last night mentioned that it's actually a quadrilogy, and I hadn't thought of it that way. The first one, if it's a quadrilogy, is called Down Here, and it's a film that we made about Vancouver's downtown east side. And what this person mentioned last night, a good friend, Michal, said that we've gone from hell to heaven. We've gone from the worst to paradise with these four films, starting in Vancouver's downtown east side and ending up, you know, in Haida Gwaii. And what ties them together is that so much of the energy that this city that we live in comes from the north of Canada and the north of BC and the Williston Dam, which is a place that many of the Aboriginal residents of our downtown east side were displaced by the flooding of that valley. So it goes around. So it's actually four films. The second one was called Peace Out, and it's about the Peace River watershed and about how much of the energy that we use is extracted from there and whether we're doing it responsibly or not. The third film is Oil Sands Karaoke, which picks up where the first or the second film rather ends, which is, you know, Fort McMurray and the tar sands, and it's about a karaoke contest there. And it basically asks the question, if we're aware of how much trouble that we're in as a society, how come we can't do anything about it? And the answer is pretty clear that we're preoccupied. We're winning a karaoke contest. And then this final film in it is one that looks for signs of hope, signs of life, and thankfully on Haida Gwaii we found them.
Yeah, indeed. I watched the movie myself yesterday, and that's very much the message I got from it, is that it is possible to live an alternative lifestyle and thrive at it, free from this mess that we live in modern society.
Well, that's really the point. And what struck me is that so much of the messaging that comes out of the culture that we live in, if you really look at it from that point of view, it's kind of propaganda. Like when you go to the cinema and you watch these big tentpole films, what we're presented with is the two stark choices. One is that we continue on this ruinous path that we're on, you know, over-consuming fossil fuels and so forth, and all of our resources. The alternative is to get eaten by zombies. Right? And there's nothing in between. And yet when you go to a place like Haida Gwaii, you see that there's actually a very clear alternative third path, and that's one where you just ask for a little bit less, you live a little bit more simply. I mean, how many of us don't have too many clothes in our closets? We don't need that. You know, people here have three or four cars. Like a lot of people in Haida Gwaii don't even have one because they drive each other around. So they live more simply. And once you step off of that vicious cycle of overconsumption, it's amazing how much more fun it is to live more simply.
Now, what are some of the specific choices that residents of Haida Gwaii make?
I think one of the overwhelming choices, which is not clear visually, but you get to understand it once you've been there for a while, is that they respect their elders. They listen to their elders, and their elders are the vessels of wisdom that's accumulated for, you know, in the case of the Haida Nation, 14,000 years. They know some things about how to stay alive sustainably, but they also respect their non-native elders. And so those guys are in kind of a mentorship role that we don't see here. We put our guys into old folks' homes and tell them, you know, basically to shut up and, you know, drool, right? They don't do that there. That's not what they do. But what you'll see is people get involved in sourcing their own food, and somebody will go out fishing and they'll catch 10 salmon because it's still pretty, you know, fertile there, and they'll give 8 of them away. People also build for themselves. They repair their own cars, for example. And they don't expect to have big resource jobs, the kind of jobs that our governments keep trying to create for us, to their credit, I guess, where we make, you know, $150,000, $200,000 a year driving a haul truck in the tar sands. They don't do that. And those jobs pretty much are not available on Haida Gwaii. So you'll see that people don't make as much money. There's no corporate logos there. There's no Walmarts. There's really very few places to spend your money. But still, that whole thing about always making more, you know, buying more stuff, that urge to buy a new Porsche, that stuff just doesn't happen there. So people go out and collect mushrooms instead. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would argue that it appears to be something that they're getting a real kick out of.
Now, the film's narrated by both Haida, people from the Haida Nation, and also non-native residents. Can you tell me a little bit about the mix of people who do live on Haida Gwaii?
Sure. It's about, well, the majority of people who live on Haida Gwaii are of Haida extraction. It's the Haida Nation. But it's, you know, fairly close to 50-50. It's a good question that you ask. You know, many films have been made about Haida Gwaii, and because the Haida culture is so appealing and attractive and visually beautiful, and it makes so much sense, that it's hard not to just focus on the Haida culture. What we chose to do instead, as outsiders, because we are outsiders, is we chose to focus on Haida Gwaiians, the people who've come there and have chosen to stay, even after the resource companies are gone, people who've decided that they love it there and they want to fight for the place. And so what we found that the story emerged for us is that the Haida are being incredibly inclusive about integrating with the efforts of like-minded non-First Nations people, presenting a united front against the forces that are confronting them. That's really how they won the park, is by cooperating with this huge social network. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking back in the 70s of people all over the world to help create, you know, Gwaihana's reserve.
Right. You mentioned the 70s. A lot of older listeners they'll remember the triumph and blockade to stop corporate clear-cutting back in the 70s. Now, of course, we just heard, last week or so, the new prime minister's put a moratorium on tanker traffic on the BC coast. How have they managed to be so successful in fighting for their land, do you think? And what are the challenges are they facing besides just the tanker traffic and the pipelines from Alberta?
Well, I think they were successful because they had a good cause that they believed in, and they were fighting for their lives. They really were. And they organized using every resource at their disposal extremely intelligently, and they made it work. Today, I mean, it's not as if the fight's over, and that's one of the lessons that we learned from Haida Gwaii, is that it's never over. You can never go to sleep. You can't just sit back and watch your TV. You have to get out there and march. You have to get out there and make these blockades. You have to force your politicians to do what is the right thing, because otherwise, really, the loudest voice in the room is the fossil fuel industry. And if we're not talking, they are. And they're going to get their way if we don't get ours. So it's a really clear choice that we make. They've been very instrumental in organizing with First Nations up and down the coast to stop in every way they can the Northern Gateway pipeline. So, I mean, it's one thing for Justin Trudeau to come out and say that he's going to ban tanker traffic on the coast. And I really applaud that. Everybody up there does. At the same time, if the pressure from our government, for example, to extract liquid natural gas, which there clearly is no international market for, once that's done, the pressure to export that is going to be overwhelming, and then it'll just get reconsidered, and then suddenly there'll be tankers. So we have to be vigilant, and the Haida are being super vigilant, as are all the First Nations and all the residents together on the North Coast. But, you know, we show the film, where the film gets screened a lot, and people often ask afterwards, well, what can we do? You know, here we are in Vancouver or Victoria or whatever. And what I always say is, in the time of my dad and mom, they protested, and their friends did too. They got out there and were activists. We kind of went to sleep. You know, we just got so befuddled with television sets and cell phones and stuff that we sort of forgot about that that's our duty as citizens. So right now we've got a classic case with the proposed Site C Dam up in the Peace River. It's ruinously insane to to build that dam. And yet there was a demonstration downtown just this last week, and there were somewhere between 50 and 75 mm-hmm. people at the event. There should have been 50,000, 75,000 people at that event. We shouldn't build the dam. It's just wrong.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I saw that protest outside of the BC Hydro building.
Yes.
And of course, here in Victoria really is the seat of power in BC. So yeah, it's vitally important that we organize here as well as up in Haida Gwaii.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really clear that, you know, it's one thing to say stop. And I know that there's a lot of people, possibly not listeners to Co-op Radio, but mm-hmm. there are a lot of people who would say, oh yeah, you know, hippies, you guys, you always just say stop everything. But I think that we have to be responsible and understand that when we don't want these projects to go forward, that will involve a level of personal material sacrifice. But the good news about that is that that's not necessarily a bad thing. It could, in fact, end up being a really good thing.
Thinking about cutting back a little bit, and it is a sustainable life that a lot of people can lead in Haida Gwaii, but that's not really all that easy, is it? So what maybe... Tell me a little bit more about what it is, what it's like to live in Haida Gwaii.
Well, you're right that it's not easy in the sense that we think of ease, which is, you know, kicking back with the TV or the internet. A lot of people have two or three jobs there, not in the same way that, you know, like a single mom in Detroit works her fingers to the bone, but just that there aren't those big resource jobs mm-hmm. that, you know, with benefits and stuff. So you'll see somebody who fishes, they drive a truck or, you know, a shuttle part-time, they work for parks part-time, but they do it out of choice. But people don't make a ton of money there, so mm-hmm. you don't see a lot of ostentatious, conspicuous consumption. So to say that life is harder there, I can't really agree with that, in the sense that, you know, life involves a certain amount of effort. We're breathing sure. right now. It takes effort to breathe mm-hmm. in and out, right? And so to go down to the beach and pick up some mussels, I don't really consider that onerous work, and yet that's what people do there. But, you know, one of the things that I think it's really important to stress with the film is that we're not saying that you have to move to Haida Gwaii to live a happy life. You know, Severin Suzuki in the film says so eloquently that wherever you are, nature is there. Right? There's grass would grow under our feet if we cracked the cement here. So we can do a tremendous amount where we live to live like Haida Gwaii. This could be Haida Gwaii here. This could be pristine. This could all come back if that was our focus. Instead, if we want to have two snowmobiles in every garage, it won't come back.
What do you suppose that someone, you know, like me here in Vancouver, I'm a city boy, born and bred. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Haida Gwaii, much as I'd love to go. What would you like someone like me to take away from the film?
That living simpler is better. It's more fun. And that new Porsche is not necessarily something that you need to go to sleep dreaming about. Family, I mean, and I'm not some kind, I like driving. I like all the bad things, right? But what I find is it's more fun to live more simply.
It has been a delight to talk to you this morning.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much.
We've been speaking with Charles Wilkinson. He's the director of the award-winning feature documentary, Haida Gwaii, On the Edge of the World, and it's currently screening at the Van City Theatre in downtown Vancouver until December 3rd. For showtimes and tickets, go to VIFF, that's VIFF.org. And for more information about this and Charles's other films, go to charleswilkinson.com.